We are back with a new episode of Believe in Titans following a short holiday break. We hope that you all had a wonderful holiday season as well. The Titans, well, they're one game away from what will be a long and potentially dramatic offseason following a 26-3 loss at Houston. All that remains now is the final home game of the season, Sunday against the Jacksonville Jaguars, a game that means a lot to Jacksonville and, you know, to the other two teams in the division. The Titans locked into last place. I guess if it means anything to the Titans, it is that they have yet to win a division game this year, and they certainly don't want to go 0-for as far as that goes. But we will of course dig into that and all other notable happenings of the last week or so with our usual lineup, former Titans cornerback Denard. Denard, good evening, sir.
Good evening, David. How you doing?
I am doing great. And John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you?
I am doing well, thank you.
I mentioned 26-3. Was the score in Houston on Sunday, and it was a game that was really, from my perspective, almost never really in doubt. And after, you know, you go back, yes, this hasn't been the best season for the Titans, but the previous four games they went 1-3 with 3 3-point losses, including two of them in overtime, the other one that went right down to the wire. The Miami game they won with a fight to the finish, miraculous, if you will, comeback in the final couple minutes. Denard, did you see a team Sunday that I don't want to say, or maybe I do want to say that checked out a little bit, that finally for the first time this season seemed a little less interested than they needed to be?
Less interested. I think they were already getting ready to party. it was ugly. That's probably the ugliest, well, that Cleveland game, but it just seemed like there was no emotions in this game. When you look at Houston, they came out with a sense of urgency, and congratulations to D'Amico Ryans. What a great job, and what a great job he's done turning that organization around. If they win Sunday against Indy, they are in the playoffs. So, I mean, that's a heck of a job that he's done coming from San Francisco. But when I looked at this team Sunday, David, I counted the first four possessions of Houston they scored. You know, they opened up, went down for the field goal, and then you're talking about the strike, the touchdown, to go up 10-0, and then you think about the sack fumble. And then that went for a touchdown, and they come back with a field goal. I mean, the first four possessions I counted, they got two field goals, one offensive TD, and one defensive touchdown. And I mean, and you telling me this offense that only generated 3 points in the game, it was over from the time they stepped on the field Sunday in Houston.
Yeah, and Will Levis got hurt on that play that resulted in the defensive touchdown. Ryan Tannehill came in after having played the previous week. And I mean, John, I guess it's fair to say Tannehill never had a chance hardly Sunday. The offensive line, which of course we've talked about ad nauseum on here, did him no favors in that game. And you know, what's your sense of where this team is going into the final week? Is you know, will there be a sort of prideful response Sunday, or will it be, you know, we heard Taylor Lewan in recent years talk about how early in his career, you know, guys were making off-season plans as early as November. Is, you know, are guys already looking forward to cleaning out their locker next week, do you think?
I think, you know, I think that when there's no carrot out there, when there's no, you know, playoff motivation, I think it's probably hard. I mean, you know, Denard, you would obviously know the best of us, but I would guess it's more difficult to become motivated in those situations. Yes, you know, there's still personal pride, and you want to play for your teammates, your guys next to you, play for the uniform, play for the fans, home fans, et cetera, et cetera. But I imagine it's still naturally just a little bit more difficult. Honestly, you know, when I watched the Houston game, I didn't necessarily, you know, I agree with you. There was no incredible a sense of urgency or energy, but at the same time, I still think it's just a talent issue more than anything right now. I mean, you look at the defense that the Titans started in that game. These are some of the starters on defense, not guys who are coming in for a little bit of rotation every now and then, but Marlon Davidson, Jaleel Johnson, Kayvon Wallace, Otis Reese, and Eric Gehrer. That's about half of your starting defense, you know, and still the defense only gave up 19 points. You know, the one of the touchdowns, you know, was scored otherwise with the fumble sack and recovery for the touchdown. And offensively, as we just referenced, you know, there were six more sacks in these games. When there aren't sacks, the quarterbacks are still getting hit more often than not. And I just think it's awfully hard to develop any kind of consistency, you know, behind an offensive line like that. So I tend to lean toward it to being a talent problem more than a, you know, than an energy issue at that time. But at the same time, I do think, and I think it's somewhat natural that there's just always going to be that little bit lack of an energy when you don't have that carrot of postseason play still dangling.
Yeah, and Mike Vrabel, you know, sort of I guess expressed the level of frustration that exists over whatever the reasons, and certainly, you know, he has a different perspective than any of us, anybody else in the world, really, in terms of how he's dealing with things. But John, he actually dropped an F-bomb in his Monday press conference.
He did. He did indeed. The funniest thing, though, is that he came up to the podium today, which we're recording this on Wednesday. He had his next press session today, and he started off with an apology, particularly to Gentry Estes of the Tennessean, who was the one who asked the question provoking said F-bomb. And he said in part, you know, I want to say an apology for using that kind of language. And words to this effect, he said, you know, really, that's out of character for me to use language like that, which was comical, of course, to all of us. Maybe it's out of character for him at a podium, but it's certainly not out of character for Mike Vrabel to use that kind of language in general. Anybody who's been on the sidelines, you know, as we have to watch 5 minutes of practice can tell you that's very much his style of vocabulary. But anyway, you know, I don't think it was the end of the world. I think honestly that what him using the F-bomb in the press conference might help him in the minds of some fans who are saying, you know, hey, where's the emotion from Mike Vrabel? All we ever hear is got to play better, got to coach better, blah blah blah, and want to hear a little of that frustration bubble over. Want to know that it's driving him crazy. And I think what they saw was kind of some raw emotion there. I don't think that was contrived. I think that he was expressing what it's like to lose and to lose so often, like the Titans have when they've lost 18 of their last 23 games. So I think that was a slice of Mike Vrabel raw. And if anything, I think it may have done him more good than not in the eyes of a lot of fans who are just as frustrated as Mike Vrabel is right now.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And Denard, you know, a guy like Mike Vrabel, he's been at the podium 4 or 5 days a week, every week during the season for the last 6 years now. He does also, you know, he is well schooled in what that moment is. Most players are used to dealing with the media. Some at, you know, who come out of bigger college programs actually get a lot of media training before they get to the NFL. Guys know, you know, how to conduct themselves in these moments. To your sense, how much frustration and just emotion is there that would prompt that kind of moment from Mike Vrabel when he's standing at a podium with cameras and microphones and all that pointed at him?
Well, he's a lot nicer than Sean Payton.
Thank Good you. point, yes.
He's a lot nicer than Sean Payton, I'll tell you that much. And that's exactly, you remember when Jim Mora went off years ago and he kept talking about playoffs You guys keep playoffs? Really? Are you serious? And that's what happens, David, when you're losing. I mean, it's just frustration that just mounts. And I think the reporter, she must have caught him on the wrong day. I think somebody already pissed, made him mad. And that's just what happens when you go through a season. The coaches and players, we read those articles sometimes, and we hear the all these YouTube channels and things like that. They tell us to channel out. But that's what happens when you. When everything, all that losing, it just mounts, and it's just frustration. And look at Mike Vrabel. I mean, I kind of went through David, and I look at what this man has done since his tenure in Nashville. You think about when he came in 2018, 9-7, but the following year they lose to Kansas City in the AFC Championship in 2019. Let's not forget in 2021, Tennessee used 91 players that season in winning the AFC and. You know, taking over that conference and ended up getting the first round bye, which is what, the third time in since the inception of that franchise since 1960. That's not easy to do. So we got to give him credit, and not to mention he's working with the new general manager. We don't know. I would love to know the relationship he has with Rand Carthon, because that's going to be a big decision if he comes back or not this offseason.
Yeah, and that's a it's an interesting point about Vrabel too. You know, we all saw what he did the first couple seasons, and there's got to be some level of what he's experiencing right now where he feels like so much of this is out of his control. And you look at this team's record under Vrabel in one touchdown games. You know, for his first 4 years, they went 21-10 in games decided by 8 points or fewer, including 7-2 each in 21 and 2022. You know, and I think if you're a coach and you've got that kind of record, you probably feel like more often than not, you can come up with the right answer from a scheme standpoint or a strategy standpoint late in the game, or you know, a time management, whatever it takes in those moments. You know, Mike Vrabel has reason to feel good about his ability to do the job because this team has won more close games than not. This year, they're 4-7 in games decided by 8 points or fewer, and he probably does look at this, and I think to a certain degree, rightfully so, that there's only so much he can do with what he has right now. And you mentioned, you know, you talk about Rand Carthon, which kind of leads us right into the next point here. There's a lot of chatter from national reporters, some who have more credibility than others, but it seems to be a fairly consistent message that Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, and that Mike Vrabel might try to force his way out or walk away this offseason and try to find another opportunity elsewhere. And Denard, you brought up D'Amico Ryans, the head coach of Houston now, who was on the staff at San Francisco, which, you know, is obviously a terrific organization, probably the second best team in the NFL right now behind Baltimore. Rand Carthon, of course, came from San Francisco as well. And you know, whatever the working arrangement was between John Robinson and Mike Vrabel, and certainly they didn't agree on everything. We can all point to Mike Vrabel's reaction to the AJ Brown trade as clear evidence of that. But those two guys, you know, both were sort of rooted in the New England system. They, you know, their sense of what it takes to win was rooted in the same place, you know, all the success that each of them enjoyed with the Patriots there. Rand Carthon, coming from San Francisco, is a guy who undoubtedly has some different ideas, and they probably have had to navigate some bumps along the way. So I certainly, as I look at these reports, I think there's certainly something to it. You know, how severe the divide between the two of them is, I can't say, and we probably won't know for at least another week or so. But you know, John, going back to Vrabel's Monday press conference, He was asked about this week and gave a would you call it a politically correct answer, or do you think it was even better than that?
Yeah, it was actually today that he was asked on that
Excuse me, yeah,
front
Wednesday,
about
that's right.
the yeah on the on kind of his future, and it was interesting. Some of his responses. He said, "I'm excited to build this thing and to fix this thing and get it to where we want it to be, to win championships with Ran and the assistant general managers and the coaching staff and everybody. That's what our goal is." I mean, that's fairly specific. That to me, that offers a sense that, that he does be the plan is to be here. And I kind of threw out a follow-up question today on that front, and I said, so that means you want to be here next year. And he said, of course. But then I don't know, maybe you're just parsing word, maybe I'm just parsing words a little bit too much, but not only did he say, of course, then he said, I want to be here next year. I'll be here as long as we can win and as long as we can do this thing. So then, and again, maybe you're trying to read too much into every word, but is he kind of giving himself an out, by saying if things don't go well with Ran or the way the direction that the front office is going this offseason, can he then say, yeah, well, I don't think we're going to be winning like this, so now I want out. So I don't know. Again, maybe you're studying words too closely when you look at that kind of a sentence. Maybe we should just basically look at the fact that he said, "Yeah, I want, I of course I want to be here next year," which was as definitive a statement as we've heard so far. But I'm kind of like what you referenced, David, too. I think it's almost like there's too much smoke out there for there not to be maybe just the tiniest kernel of truth to the fact. That this relationship may not be great, but on the other hand, I mean, Brent Carlton has been here one season. Like how much, can have possibly gone wrong in one season? I mean, you're going to have disagreements with anybody, and how much can things have gone off the rails in one season? Don't you give a relationship a little bit more of a chance than that? So. I did think Vrabel's comments today were fairly definitive towards the next season, but I still thought he left himself a little bit of an out as well.
Well, I'll say this though too, from what I have observed and what I know about how the business works, and I've been in it over 3 decades now, as you have, John. I would wager virtually anything that Rand Carthen has many, many, many more off the record conversations with reporters. Local and national, particularly national, than Mike Vrabel does. And I just wonder if some of that is not coming directly from Rand Carthen, who if and whether or not Carthen has a guy, presumably somebody on the San Francisco staff, or I don't know, that he has a guy in mind. And keep in mind, Mike Vrabel got this job unexpectedly. Mike Mularkey had led the Titans to a playoffs and a win in the playoffs, a come from behind win at Kansas City in 2017. And then all of a sudden he gets fired. Mike Vrabel comes in and interviews, and 2 days later he's given the head coaching job. And I mean, there was no doubt at that moment that John Robinson, when he got the job as general manager, had sort of his list of, if I ever get to hire a head coach, these are guys I'm going to want to talk to. And Mike Vrabel was probably at the top of that list. And Vrabel was getting interviews, after I always contend John Robinson thought he'd have more time. But all of a sudden, after one season as a defensive coordinator, Vrabel was scheduled to interview in Indianapolis and I think one other place. And
Right, maybe
John,
Wilson.
yeah, maybe that's what it was. And I think John Robinson saw his chance to hire this guy slipping away and move to make sure he got him here. And I can't help but wonder if maybe history is repeating itself a little bit and Rand Carthen isn't trying to sort of lay the groundwork to create a separation between these guys, because you know that there are going to be people from San Francisco, you know, as Robert Saleh got the job a couple years ago in New York, there's, you know, as good as that team has been, people are going to be looking at that staff to want to fill some openings. So I can't help but wonder, and again, this I don't know that any of that's true, but I just as a guy, as an observer and a guy who's been in it and knows how it works, I kind of feel like that might be what's going on here. And I got to ask you, Denard, I don't know. I'm old enough to remember when Jerry Jones fired Jimmy Johnson, and Michael Irvin threw a bit of a hissy fit at reporters and actually, you know, outside the locker room, and he threw a trash can at them, telling them to go away. He was very emotional that day. Denard, are you know, players are on social media. They hear this. Are they? You think most of them are terribly concerned about who their coach is going to be, or is it, look, as long as I'm under contract, as long as I have a job, I'll show up. Whoever's here to coach me, they can coach me.
No, you want to know who's going to be your coach. That's important because that can end up, it can make a career and it can end a career. Look at Russell Simmons, Russell Wilson out in Denver right now. You don't think they're going through capital HELL out there in that locker room? It's a lot going on between the general managers at Patton, right down to Sean. Right down to Russell Wilson. I mean, there's a lot going on. So listen, that's a lot of speculations. I mean, we had that situation in Nashville back years ago in 1999, because everybody knows that Coach Fisher, and a lot of people don't know this, was given kind of an ultimatum. Either we go to the Super Bowl or 9 out of 10, he was probably going to lose his job. We were not having the most successful campaign for about 2 or 3 years. And we won, and we didn't win that game against Buffalo. Coach actually made a he made a joke that well, at least I get to coach for another week. I was getting ready to go back to my home out in Southern California.
Is that right? I never heard that one.
he wasn't playing around. He kind of said it in a joking fashion, but everybody knew if we didn't win that game. So luckily for Coach, because I mean, when you bring another coach in, David, that kind of changes the whole, it changes everything. It's like a new organization. You know, you get used to doing one thing, and now you got somebody else that's going to bring their DNA, their philosophy. So, and it might not fit what you do well. I mean, who's to say when you bring, if you bring in a new coach, he's going to want a Derrick Henry. Maybe he's going to want to rebuild. I mean, have you ever thought about that? He's going to want a new, you know, quarterback situation. I mean, there's so many factors. So with this situation that's going on, I think it's a lot of speculation. Look, Mike Vrabel, and if you can stop me if I'm wrong about this, but he just signed prior to the 2022 season a contract extension, right?
Well, there's a report that there's been one report that says that the extension maybe doesn't exist, or like maybe there's an opt out or something.
That's
That
rumors, David.
reporter, he retracted that.
He did retract that. Okay.
Yeah, it was
That's
Michael
why
Lombardi. Yeah.
you got to watch, you guys, you know, because you know a lot of those writers be starting those rumors like that.
Yeah. No, that was my, if you're, I think the one you're referencing, David, is Michael
It was
Lombardi.
Michael Lombardi. Yeah,
Michael
exactly.
Lombardi.
Yeah, and he has since said he misspoke or misfired or something along those lines, and said that Vrabel still has 2 more years on his left on his contract. So nice of him to stir up, you know, a
Yeah,
hurricane and say,
there it
"Oops,
goes. That's
sorry
what
about
they
that."
do.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and that is the hazard. You know, there it's always been imperative to be right. It's more so imperative to be
Exactly.
right nowadays, because news with the internet and social media and everything, news spreads everywhere all at once. There's no chance to tamp it down. But Denard, you referenced Derrick Henry, and let's talk about some good things here. Derrick Henry, with one game to go in the season, has 1,014 rushing yards, so he has topped 1,000 once again. What's that, 5 years in a row, or 5 times, not 5 in a row. Of course, a couple of years ago, the foot injury kept him just short of that. And DeAndre Hopkins with 1,011 receiving yards. So a 1,000-yard rusher and a 1,000-yard receiver from a team that has not had good offensive line play this offseason. That's probably a bit of an upset. John, which of those is more impressive to you? Because it seems a bit unlikely that this would be the case in this particular year.
Yeah, you're right. Most of the time when you talk about a team with, hey, look at the balance and the firepower they have with a 1,000-yard runner, 1,000-yard receiver, you're talking about a high-powered, high-charged offense. Not the case with the Titans, certainly. I think they're, both great accomplishments. I think you can make a case, obviously, for both that are more impressive, with Derek certainly running behind this line. Pretty amazing that one can hit 1,000 yards while doing it behind a line that has consistently been ranked or graded as one of the worst this year. At the same time, I think some of his numbers weren't as impressive this year. He's averaging under 4 yards a carry, only 3 games over 500, while there were 6 games that were under 50. So when you consider he was only averaging about 63 yards a game. I think a little bit more towards DeAndre Hopkins' 1,000-yard achievement as being the more impressive of the two, primarily because there are so few other receiving threats on this team. We all know how Treylon Burks' season has gone. Just went off the rails from a guy there was a lot of expectations for, to a guy who was in and out of the lineup, couldn't hold on to passes, hasn't come close to reaching potential. So for the vast majority of the season, DeAndre Hopkins has been the guy, that the Titans have to throw the ball to. He's also a couple of years older than Derrick Henry. He's played more seasons than Derrick Henry, so there's more wear and tear. But at the same time, he ended up averaging 14.9 yards per catch. So it's not like he was just out there catching a bunch of, short passes and trying to do things with them. He was getting open downfield. He was responsible for the vast majority of the big chunk plays for this Titans team. So I lean to him a little bit more as a greater accomplishment, but you got to give Derrick Henry a lot of props for finding enough room to get 1,000 behind a line that didn't open too many holes for him.
Yeah, it's been hard yards all year for Derrick Henry, unlike what we've seen to some degree in the past. But DeAndre Hopkins, though, you mentioned it, John, 14.9 yards per reception. That's his highest in nine seasons. I mean, you got to go back to his second year in Houston, second year in the league, when for him to have a better yards per catch. And it sort of makes you sort of lament what could have been for this offense if they had gotten even just good offensive line play. If the quarterbacks had time to stand in there and Hopkins had time to finish his route and get open more often than he did. I mean, it could have been much more magical than it is. Now, of course, he's under contract for next season, and presumably we'll be back. We'll see what happens with Derrick Henry, but we just can't say it enough that the offensive line has to get better, has to get significantly better this off season. And Denard, I mean, I'm curious. You were excited as anyone when DeAndre Hopkins signed for two guys at this stage in their career to do what they did when it wasn't easy for them to do so. How, from your perspective, how impressive are those numbers for each of those guys?
Man, what an amazing! I mean, you think about the Julio Jones situation years ago. Everybody was so excited, Julio getting to Nashville. Now they're going to get over the hump. He's going to be paired with AJ Brown, and that relationship. I mean, it was a great relationship between AJ and Julio, but it just didn't work out. Julio was banged up for majority of the year. He didn't put up the stats that we were looking for. But for D Hop, this is amazing. I was kind of reading up on this, and it's the seventh time D Hop has eclipsed the 1,000-yard mark. But what's really amazing and we're talking about a first ballot Hall of Famer. You're thinking about, think about this, in 11 years, only four players have eclipsed this mark. And I'm talking about over 1,000 yards, seven times. Was it receptions or what, 900? And what the yardage, what he has 1,200 yards. They talk about the touchdowns, over 70 touchdowns. Only Marvin Harrison, Jerry Rice, Brandon Marshall, and Larry Fitzgerald has done it in a span of 11 years. That is amazing. And what, three out of those four are Hall of Famers. And I mean, what a job he's done. I mean, you know how hard that is? I mean, with a new team, you got what, you had to go through two quarterbacks. You got a line that, I mean, hasn't been able to protect the quarterback all season, and he's eclipsed this for the seventh time in his career at, and really in a stage where most guys start to kind of wear down. And that's what's been amazing about D Hop. And not to mention, he was the bright spot the other day in Houston. I mean, he's the one that kind of, especially in the first half when they were getting him the ball, he was kind of the one that was kind of making those tough runs, breaking those kind of eluding those defenders and getting those tough yardage. So, I mean, congratulations to D Hop, man. He played well. And sometimes with a veteran, you kind of, especially when they, you feel like they don't have nothing to play for. He went out there and showed out Sunday against the Texans. I mean, he didn't have the yardage, but he did play hard. And that's something that you like to see in your vet.
Yeah, seven catches, the fourth time this season that and second time in the last 4 weeks that he's had at least that many in a game. So
What's interesting too, on seven targets also. You know, a lot of times we've seen in games where he's needed a lot of targets to make catches. Not so in this game.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you know, we when they signed him, we talked about it. You go back to 2000 and Carl Pickens, and you go through Randy Moss and Andre Johnson, and you mentioned Julio Jones more recently, Denard, all these great wide receivers who have come to this franchise and not delivered as expected. DeAndre Hopkins certainly not part of that conversation. So you mentioned Denard, the two quarterbacks, both of whom played Sunday, only one of whom practiced on Wednesday to start this week, and that was Ryan Tannehill. I mentioned Levis got hurt on the play that he fumbled that turned into a Houston touchdown. You know, we've had this discussion a couple of weeks ago. Should Ryan, if Will Levis can't play, John Glennon, should it be Ryan Tannehill again, or is there something to be gained from showcasing Malik Willis? Can the Titans find a way to do something with him to showcase him, maybe increase his trade value this offseason?
I think that window has sailed in the eyes of the Titans, the Malik Willis opportunity to play. I think they have seen all they care to of Malik Willis, and you know, Mike Vrabel has said that if Levis can't go, that Ryan Tannehill is going to be the guy again. And you know, I guess when it comes to whether it should be Levis or not, you know, I think in general, I am a guy who, you know, as Mike Vrabel seems to feel also, I'm of the opinion, like, even if the games in general are meaningless when it comes to getting a rookie quarterback, you know, snaps out there, nothing beats live game experience. And you know, you can't just put him in bubble wrap forever. That said, maybe in this instance, there's one game left now. We all know it's meaningless for the Titans. And we all know that Levis, even if he winds up being able to play, he didn't practice today on Wednesday. Even if he's able to play, it's pretty likely he's not going to be 100%. So maybe if there's any argument for sitting a guy for his own health and well-being, maybe this Sunday on the 17th game, maybe that's the case. You throw in the fact that you maybe give Ryan Tannehill one last go around in front of the Nissan Stadium fans. You know, maybe that kind of thing make is more meaningful and more relevant now that you're not playing for the playoffs as well. So, you know, I don't think it's the end of the world if Will Levis is only 80 or 90%, if they go ahead and sit him down. And hey, if you happen to lose this game anyway, well, oh well, maybe that gets you in better position to get you a left tackle in the top five picks of the draft, better able to protect Will Levis in the future. So maybe that comes into the argument as well.
Denard, would if you're coaching this team, would you try to get Will Levis on the field if you can,
No.
if he's at all healthy, or do you say, look,
Absolutely.
kid, you've done enough this year?
You've done enough. I mean, you show that you're the future of this franchise. And so if you think about it, if I'm Ron Tannehill, heck, I don't want to play. Well, did Houston get to about five times? I counted, it was in the fourth quarter, about 7:41, when he got sacked by Derek Barnett. That was the fifth sack that I counted. And I'm like, if you Ryan Tannehill, you're like, listen, I'm gonna be a free agent, man. I don't want to go out there and get hurt. And you got a Jacksonville team that's gonna come in, they're gonna be hungry. So again, I'm thinking sometimes maybe this is a good situation for Malik to kind of put something on tape or film. That way, you know, you can get some kind of value from, you know, out of him, because there's going to be some teams that are going to need a backup quarterback. And I mean, this could be a great situation for him to go out there and to kind of showcase his skills and just put something on tape for other teams to see.
Yeah, and we should point out, I guess, if there's one bit of drama going into Sunday, it is whether or not Jacksonville's Josh Allen will end up as the NFL sack leader. He currently has 16 and a half, trails Pittsburgh's T.J. Watt and Cincinnati's Trey Hendrickson by a half. And the way this offensive line has been playing, I would think Josh Allen is really excited about the opportunity that awaits him Sunday against Tennessee.
I like his chances.
Me
You
too.
do. I'll second that.
The guy and
He might
yeah,
catch Strahan.
I mean the yeah the guy that's exactly right. I mean the guy's playing his best football right now. I mean every time I'm looking at highlights, it seems like he's blowing up quarterbacks right now. So. It's it might be one of those deals where the coaches keep nine men in and to block and just send D Hop out and say go beat an entire secondary. I mean it is it looked bad at times on Sunday. It has to be, it's obviously not going to be great, but it has to be better this week against the Jaguars. But that is the end of this opportunity for us to talk about the Titans, I guess. And we will be back next week to break down that last game and get started on the off season. Until then, Denard Walker, as always, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
John Glennon, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And I am David Beauclair, and thank all of you for listening to Believe in Titans.